Good afternoon, friends. This is Carolyn Evers, and I love all of you, but I have to tell you that perhaps one of the worst things that could have happened to a co-host has happened to me. I'm not able to connect with Richard Gage, who is the architect that was to give the information on the controlled demolition of 911. But we're trying to connect him. We're still dialing the number. We're going to try to bring him on board. And like the bride says, if the groom doesn't show up, I'm going on with this ceremony without him. His website is www.ae911truth.org. And there, he has a program there. It's a slideshow. It's 350 slides. And I have to tell you, friends, I went through every one of those slides today. And it's one of the reasons why I decided to go ahead with this information, even though we're not able to connect with Mr. Gage. So I have no idea what happened, but we're not going to waste time here. He is an architect, and he says on his website that when the news first came out, that had to do with the destruction, the different reports. People were stunned, and they accepted what they heard without really investigating the facts. And I would say that perhaps all of us as Americans felt that way. We were stunned that something of this great magnitude would happen in our country. The beginning of the story, he shows how... Well, first I want to say the pictures are so remarkable. These 350 slides must have taken him a very long time to assemble. They are exceedingly well done. The logic, the pictures are so remarkable. I don't even know how in the world he got all of these pictures, but they're there. They are all assembled. And even if Mr. Gage is not here, if you go to the website and you look at that slide presentation, you will come to the same conclusion that I came to after I went through all these slides. I had to agree with the gentleman. He talks about how different buildings are damaged. There are some pictures in the very beginning of high-rise buildings that are flame-engulfed, and one of the things that he mentions is they do not collapse. There's pictures of buildings that have been upset and earthquakes. So he goes through this scenario of the different ways that buildings have been damaged. And it's very interesting when you see a building from a different type of a damage. It's rather classical for how the damage occurred. He starts out something relatively interesting. He talks about the World Trade Center, how it passes into private control only 3 months prior to 911. And as soon as it does, the owner immediately obtained insurance with special terrorism clauses. He develops that line a little bit, the obsolescence of the building, what needed to be done, the repairs that needed to be done. Spend some time on that, which I think is very fascinating because of the amount of money that was paid for the lease and what went on. I mean, it could have been a coincidence, but he mentions it, and I think it's very interesting information. The towers, he says, was designed by a gentleman by the name of John Skilling. And Skilling noted that he had designed the WTC Tower to take a hit from a Boeing 70 airplane at 600 miles per hour, that the building was built to resist all lateral loads. which I think is rather fascinating. Now, according to the official explanation of what happened, we probably all know this very well, that buildings were hit by airplanes. They dumped their gasoline load fuel in the building. This ignited, and all of the floors pancaked down upon each floor. In other words, the first floor fell up at the top, fell, and the weight of that floor went down and acted as a pancake, one on top of another, so that they took down the whole building. I think that is a pretty good explanation. We have a caller.
Carolyn, it's Richard Gage calling.
Richard, I'm so glad that you have joined us.
Thank you. Sorry for the delay.
It's okay. I was the bridesmaid, a bride at the altar without the groom, but I was going on with this ceremony anyway. To start out, would you be kind enough just to give a little bit about your professional background and the mission behind your organization?
You betcha. Well, I've been an architect for 20 years and worked on most types of different construction, different occupancies and so forth, public buildings, private buildings, retail. Hey, right now I'm working on a 1.2 million square foot new downtown area for a new development outside of Las Vegas. It has over 1,200 tons of steel framing, and it's a $400 million project. So it's very exciting. I work for a firm here in the San Francisco Bay Area. So we have a number of people working on this project and a lot of responsibility. So that covers me. I'm a member of the American Institute of Architects as well.
One of the things that I covered before you came on board was a little bit about the buildings themselves, how they passed into a lease of less than 3 months before 9/1, and we covered that a little bit. What we also covered was the towers designed by Mr. Skilling, that they were, he had designed it to take a hit from a Boeing 70 jet at 600 miles per hour and built to resist all lateral loads. Did you wish to add anything to that with regards to perhaps, some of the construction?
Well, sure. These buildings were exceptionally strong. In fact, in 1971, they received an award from the American Society of Civil Engineers, citing the greatest engineering achievement of mankind, or something, some wording extraordinarily like that. They were immense structures. They were designed as a fairly innovative type of structural engineering for high-rises. Before this time, there was a forest of columns, basically every 20 or 30 feet throughout the building. These buildings had 47 immense core columns in a rectangular position, shape, configuration around the elevator hoistways. And these were almost solid steel columns at the bottom, ranging in size from 52 by 22 inches to 30 inches by 16 inches. And then they would thin, these box columns, their walls would thin as they reached the top. Surrounding this core structure is another perimeter tube of 14-inch by 14-inch columns, and this was basically a bearing wall on the outside. Spanning between these two structures, and that wall, by the way, was over-designed by a factor of 20 in terms of its lateral load resisting, or resisting of hurricane force winds. And spanning between this interior structure and the exterior structure were the floor trusses, which spanned 60 feet, and that was the innovation. You had all this open office planning that you could do completely free of columns for that 60 feet on one side and 30 feet on the other side. These two different structures were capped on the top with a hat truss, which kind of tied them together. So it was an extraordinary feat by this John Skilling and his protege, Leslie Robertson. Really, really quite amazing buildings, which is why everyone was surprised when they so-called collapsed on 9/11 after burning only an hour. Even the official story tells us that this impact by the airplane was not really a causative factor at all in the collapse. It was the fires ensuing that burned. Even so, we have over 100 examples of very hot, very large, and very long-lasting fires in steel frame high-rises that have lasted for up to 18 hours or even 24 hours, and much, much hotter fires, and not one of them has collapsed. So this is a unique occurrence in high-rise fires, that we have this series of collapses. And the collapses themselves are extremely suspicious, because what we have at the onset of collapse is 118 different people, firefighters mostly, recording by the oral recordings commissioned by the fire commissioner, Thomas von Essen, and they talk about sounds of explosions and then the building coming down, flashes of light and then the building coming down, 118 individual cases. Now, this was not known until August of 2005, when the New York Times sued the city of New York to obtain these oral recordings. And so they finally succeeded through an overturning of the New York Court State of Appeals. And now we know why the city did not want this information to come out. So this is very, very damning evidence for the evidence of explosives in the building. And indeed, that's what we see in all of the videos and all of the photographs. You see this incredible mushrooming of the clouds of pulverized concrete and beams that are hurled 500 feet laterally, 20-ton beams at 50 miles an hour out of the building. You can calculate this because we have the videos impaling themselves on surrounding buildings. We have all the windows broken in a 400-foot radius around each of the twin towers due to these blast pressures. And the ends of these beams are, curiously enough, dripping with molten metal. And this is fires, even jet fuel fires, do not produce molten metal. Fires, including jet fuel fires, only get up to be about 12 to 1400 degrees Fahrenheit. And yet, what we have is molten metal being produced. That takes at least 2700 degrees, more than twice the temperature that is given to us, even by NIST, the agency who finally took over the investigation from FEMA. NIST is National Institute of Standards and Technology. So it's a very, very, very problematic set of data for the official story, the production of molten metal, which is found, by the way, by the ton down at the basements, in the basements of not only the two World Trade Center Twin Towers, but Building 7 as well, a building that many people don't even know about. It had molten metal found in it. The firemen described it flowing like lava. There's at least a couple of dozen witnesses of this molten metal. And in the case of Building 7, what we have is it was not hit by an airplane, you might recall, and it came down with a sudden onset. It came on. It came down smoothly, symmetrically, and at free fall speed, virtually 6.5 seconds. The overall global collapse. The perimeter of the building drops smoothly. Now, into its own footprint, in the classic manner of a controlled demolition. So that is not something that fire can reproduce. Why? Because in order to bring down this building, this 47-story building, easily the highest building in 33 of our states, you'd have to take out the core columns, all 24 of them, within a tenth of a second of each other. And then within a half a second, you have to take out the perimeter columns all within a tenth of a second of each other, or you begin to have a building that tips on you. And this happens in controlled demolitions when the charges don't go off just right. It has to be perfect. And in this case, it really, really was just about perfect. And fire, as you know, doesn't do that. It's an organic process, and there were about 8 fires throughout the building caused by the debris from World Trade Center North Tower hitting the building, and random floors, you know, about eight fires in various places, and those fires move around the building kind of organically throughout the day, looking for new fuel sources every 20 minutes or so, and when we do have collapses due to fire, it's always a kind of an asymmetrical collapse. A building tends to fall over because one place will get hotter than the others. So we have no examples, we have no evidence to suggest that this building was collapsed by fire, and every piece of evidence that it was brought down by controlled demolition, such as the chemical evidence in the molten metal of thermate, a cutter charge used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. This is found basically by FEMA. FEMA documented the melted girders in World Trade Center 7, and they did chemical analysis on it, and they found sulfidation, rapid oxidation, and intergranular melting. Normal office fires do not produce this. It's beyond the capability of those temperatures. And so FEMA's really puzzled, you know, what could have produced all this. They found flanges that have gaping holes in them the size of a silver dollar. Well, Dr. Stephen Jones, a physicist from the university, Brigham Young University at the time, analyzed also some of the slag from the ends of these beams and some of the chunks of molten metal that were brought up, and he finds in them the direct chemical evidence of thermate. Thermate is thermite with added sulfur. Sulfur is the ingredient that lowers the melting point of steel. So it corroborates FEMA's work. And what did NIST do when they took over the investigation after FEMA completed their work? They scrubbed this entire set of evidence that FEMA had put together and threw it out. It's not in the official report anymore. And this is a crime. I mean, this is a direct destruction of evidence of easily what were the three worst structural failures in modern history. And in fact, FEMA had a hand in this too, as they saved only a few pieces of steel from this entire devastation against the railing of these fire protection engineers. And Fire Engineering magazine demanded the stopping of the destruction of all of this evidence. They were hauling it away at 800 truckloads a day and leaving only a couple of hundred pieces of steel ultimately. And none of that, all but I think one piece was from the World Trade Center Twin Towers. Only one piece or so from the from Building 7.
Am I pronouncing this word right? Squibs.
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 Yeah.
Can you explain that to the listeners, how they were visible, what it means?
Sure. We have, in the case of the Twin Towers, these mistimed explosions that occur 20, 40, and even 60 stories below the ensuing collapsing building. And they are ejections of, NIST gives us an answer. In their words, they're puffs of air being produced by the compressed air as a result of this 15-story building on top, which begins its descent and compresses this air through the elevator hoistway, and it comes out through the office space. Well, first of all, these are not puffs of air. They are pulverized building materials, and they occur speeds of 160 to 200 feet per second. These are explosive speeds, not compressed air speeds where air is filling a room. And also, if there was air coming down the hoistway and it did fill this open office planning space, you would have maybe the whole room filling up uniformly with air pressure before any windows were busted. And then it might just be, it might be several windows or all of them, but not just one, and not highly focalized explosions occurring at the exact midpoints between the corners of the building on the facade. So it's clearly not, as NIST suggests to us, extremely unlikely, especially since they're occurring, you know, up to 60 stories below the collapsing tower top. But not only that, there is no 15-story section of building pushing the rest of this building down. It is occurring, the 15-story section above the point of the jet plane impacts. If you watch the videos on our website, ae911truth.org, what you will see is that this 15-story section, in the first 2 seconds, collapses into about 7 stories. Half of its mass is gone in the first 2 seconds. And then after that, the rest of it is gone in about 2 more seconds, such that after 4 seconds, there's nothing pushing this building down. What you see is it's tearing itself apart at free fall speed with nothing pushing it down. It's a series of explosions radiating debris out 1,200 feet in all directions. And we don't see any stack of floors at the bottom of either World Trade Center like we would expect to if it were, as they told us, a gravitational collapse started by weakening of structural steel by the fire. So what we see instead is that all of the debris has been, the concrete floors have been pulverized, talking 90,000 tons of concrete in each tower, to a powder and a gravel. The powder is finer than the width of the human hair, very, 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 very small, almost like talcum powder. And there's not 20 floors. There's not even one floor at the bottom of either of these twin towers. There's only about 2 or 3 stories of stuff, and that stuff is aluminum cladding and structural steel, most all of it. There's no macroscopic chunks of concrete found at the bottom. It's been virtually completely pulverized. So all of these facts add up and support the hypothesis of controlled demolition, and none of them support the official stories, collapse by fire and structural weakening of the steel.
Well, one of the things that fascinated me, Richard, was the pictures. I just think the pictures that you have are amazing, and one in particular was a picture of a squib that you're talking about. To be able to see this proof in pictures, I found quite remarkable, and then to have what you were seeing in the pictures, to have it corroborated by the witnesses, mostly the fire department personnel that was there, what they saw, what they heard, and then to see it in the pictures, I found quite fascinating. Let's just back up a little, if you will. I found something else of interest, and that was some information that came out of BBS, the British Broadcasting System, mentioning the building being destroyed before it actually occurred. There was a picture there. Perhaps you don't recall that slide.
I'm not sure what you're saying. Destroyed before they actually were.
Well, one of the buildings. The news narrator from the British Broadcasting System was talking about the destruction of a building before it actually occurred.
Yeah. They announced the destruction of Building 7 at 5:00 in the afternoon, and the cause of its destruction, they said, due to structural weakening. The problem is that the building didn't collapse until 5:20, which is about 20 minutes later. So, they of course apologized for this dreadful mistake. The key question is, citing the confusing events of the day, but does that make them psychic, that they can predict the collapse of the building, especially when no building, high-rise steel frame building, has ever collapsed due to fire? I mean, ever. And there's been over 100 examples of such. So apparently they got a script, and they read it a little bit early. And that's a cause for some key questioning. And the 280 architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth that I am representing are demanding a real investigation of the collapses based on all of the scientific forensic evidence that I've been highlighting and that more of exists on our website, as well as some of these auxiliary issues such as the announcement of the building before it even collapsed as having collapsed by the BBC. We don't point fingers as to who may have been responsible or why they did it, or really even how they did it. We know some form of explosives were used. We know that thermite, there's chemical evidence of thermite, not only in the molten metal and the slag from the ends of the beams, and as documented really by FEMA, but in the dust itself. And this is an extraordinary story. About 8 months ago, Dr. Jones, a physicist I was referring to from Brigham Young University, he finds these tiny iron-rich microspheres laced in all the dust, some of them, most of them smaller than the human eye can even see. And these are almost perfectly round iron spheres. Now, how in the world did they form? And, well, if you had thousands of thermite cutter charges placed throughout the buildings, and they're going off, and they're fairly explosive, as it turns out, the size of this thermite is nano size, almost making it more explosive. Then the pressure, the byproduct of a aluminothermic reaction is molten iron. So that's really important. All this molten metal we were talking about is not molten steel; it's molten iron, and it is the byproduct of all of these thermite charges. So if you have this aluminothermic reactions going off under this high pressure, you're going to have a liquid that's dispersed under extreme pressure. It's going to form itself into spheres, just like if you spray a water bottle. All of those are spheres, and very, very small. And then they're going to cool, and they cool into the shape that they were formed in, which before they hit the ground, which is a sphere. So this is the only possible way that we can think of that these spheres could have formed. Well, it turns out that as he analyzes these spheres, they have all of the chemical traits of a classic thermate controlled experiment. All of the signature elements, such as aluminum, iron oxide, potassium, manganese, and some other various minor elements. And so this is direct physical evidence, I mean, incontrovertible. And guess what? The USGS did dust studies as well, and R.J. Lee did dust studies for the Deutsche Bank building, and they documented the spheres as well in their study, and they cannot explain where they come from. They just simply document that they're there, and with the same chemical ingredients, which they don't bother to go and figure out. That is the direct evidence of a thermate cutter charge. But it's in all the dust, and so there's no, you know, there's no question any longer about what charges were used to bring these buildings down, at least thermate, that is to say.
If I might, Richard, I'd like to draw your attention to some information that you have with regards to the core area columns, how they were easily accessible from elevators.
Ah, well, yeah, the key question is how would somebody have planted all these charges in this building, which was occupied by 25,000 people, I think, in each building. And if you had access to the elevators, what you could do, that would in turn give you, and I'm talking the elevator shaft, not necessarily the cabs, but you could hack through the gypsum board enclosure, which is two layers of 3/4-inch sheetrock is basically what it is. And you have direct access to the all of the core columns in between the floors. You can then set these charges and in the core beams as well, such that without being detected. And it turns out that there was a elevator modernization going on, which is documented by Elevator World in the March 2001 issue, and that was going on in the 9 months prior to 9/11, and each of these elevators was in turn locked up and under a guard, in addition to being locked. So, without being seen by anybody other than security, these charges could have been placed in all of these.
So there was access.
Columns. So you had access to all the core columns. You didn't necessarily have easy access to the perimeter columns. And that's why we think these charges had to be sufficient enough not only to blow out the core columns, but the floors outside the core columns that span between the core and the perimeter columns. And then sufficient enough to blow out and bust the bolts of each of the prefabricated pieces of the perimeter bearing wall. There was three columns vertically and three spandrel panels wide that made up each of these pieces, which were in turn, they were welded together, and then in turn they were bolted to all the other prefabricated elements. So all you have to do is put enough pressure on them to bust each of those components, and that's what we see substantially.
Well, that kind of ties in with the wireless detonation, the Hi-X Teleblaster 2.
Oh, well, yeah. The question is, do you have to run miles and miles of wire throughout the building? And the answer is no. They have very high-tech stuff these days, of course, radio-controlled detonation delivery, computer-controlled from remote system is common in the industry today. So that's shown on our website, ae911truth.org, as well.
As I said, the pictures are so remarkable. They're for those And I really do encourage our listeners to go to the website to look at the information and also to contribute. Let me talk about this particular slide, and then perhaps you can explain your program about taking engineers to lunch.
Yeah.
This particular slide is 132. There is a close-up of the explosion on top of one of the buildings, and it says, does this look like a gravitational collapse? This was the North Tower broken down into shippable lengths. I mean, when you see this, when to me, these pictures are so remarkable. I don't know how in the world you got them all, Richard.
Well, we just kind of collected them from other sources, basically. The problem is that these beams were cut, well, the columns, let's say. The floor-to-floor height was 12.5 feet, and the beam, each of the columns was 3 floors high, so that's 37.5 feet. And so they busted most of them at their welds, and in the case of the columns, it appears as though they were busted with a concussive blast at the weld splice, column to column, such that that would push that that weakened joint sideways, breaking the weld, because a lot of the welds look fairly smooth. And what you see is discoloration indicating a thermal event, a reddish scarring on the ends of the columns. And then one side of many of these beams, columns, is at the end is concave, and the opposite side is kind of splayed out. And we're putting together now documentation, photo documentation of that. But people can get more information on this at Gordon Ross's excellent site. It's called GordonSite.com.
GORDONS?
And then site.
Uh-huh.
Gordon's site, two S's, yeah.
Okay.
.com. And he indicates there how he believes that the core columns were taken out with concussive, and then the beams we believe were taken out with these thermite linear shape charges. They would cut a beam fairly raggedly as the thermite with the sulfur in it would lower the melting point of steel, and you can see some of the beams in our website that the ends of them are cut really quite raggedly, and this is in direct contrast to the oxyacetylene cuts that were done at the site by the iron workers who did a fair amount of cutting as well. That's more of a clean process, whereas the thermite cut kind of will actually waver 2 or 3 inches.
Well, what you're doing now, from what I understand, Richard, is you have this program of taking engineers to lunch and doing a presentation of this particular slide program. Is that basically what you're about right now?
Yeah, what we do is go to see architects and structural engineers in the area here in the San Francisco Bay Area. We buy them lunch because our members provide donations for that purpose. And not only our members, but anybody, any of your listeners can help us, by the way.
Well, that's why I wanted to mention that, Richard, because it was one of the first things that I did is I went to the site and donated, and I wanted you to talk about it because I hope that the listeners will do the same thing. So,
you
provide lunch, you educate the engineers, and then what's the next step?
Well, it turns out that so far, most all of the people who see this evidence, and not just hear about it, I think people really have to see it. It's so evident, self-evident, that they go, "My God, why didn't I hear about this before?" You know, they want to know. Well, that's a important question to ask too, because the media has not allowed any of this information into circulation, even though the 9/11 truth movement is growing by leaps and bounds, millions every year. But people are dumbfounded. But anyway, they get beyond that and they say, "Okay, where do I sign up?" We So in my first presentation, we had 14 out of 15 people sign up on the website. That was our first 14 architects. And then we had 38 sign up here where I'm working now. And we're going from one firm to the next. But I'm also traveling all around the United States every other weekend. We just got back from L.A. where we had 400 people. When I was done there, we didn't have. I always ask at the beginning, how many people believe in the official conspiracy theory, which says that these buildings were hit by airplanes and by fundamentalist hijackers, and the fire weakened the steel and the building came down. You know, I get a number of hands ranging from one to two dozen. And at the end, in L.A., we did not have one hand up believing in the official theory anymore. And that is how self-evident this information and evidence is. It's really extraordinary, and especially architects and engineers see it. It's just that we need more people to bring more architects and engineers to this information, and you can go on the website, for instance, and order some of these postcards, which are as inexpensive as 9 cents a piece, and it lists all the evidence that we just went through, and the website, and photos of the burnt steel beams and the iron-rich microspheres, and people can order 100 of these and just hand them out to people and say, hey, there's 280 architects demanding a new investigation. You ought to check this out. And people can do that, and they don't have to put themselves on the line as being called a conspiracy theorist, right? Because we do that for you. We'll be the conspiracy theorists. Our necks are out there. Well, we have the professional credentials to be supported. So use us.
Well, I have to say that you have brought a lot of information, but I would like to mention to the listeners that really, we have just scratched the surface because the amount of information, the tests that were done, the pictures, to me, it was the pictures that really convinced me. The pictures, the tests, the testimony, all of these things put together, you have to come to the conclusion that you have come to.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, let's say, how many architects and engineers do you have right now?
Well, 280, and we need 1,000 by September 11th, 2008, and I need the help of every one of your listeners to tell people.
Why
friends,
do you need
neighbors.
1,000? That sounds like an arbitrary number. Why 1,000?
Because 1,000 will turn the heads of Congress, no matter who's
okay.
listening. And 280 should by itself. But a greater number will have greater power. And so that's our goal. And if everybody emails the AE911truth.org link to every architect and engineer that they can find, and every one of their friends and relatives as well, we will indeed reach that number, and we have a chance of turning around our country, because let's face it, this is not about buildings, right?
Absolutely.
And it's not only about the 2,700 people that were murdered in these buildings, because, well, let's face it, Al-Qaeda did not have access to plant these charges. The security company would have had to have been involved. By the way, the security company had on its board of directors, and I'm talking about the security company that Larry Silverstein installed after he took possession of this building just 6 weeks prior to 9/11. He installed Securicom, a security company on whose board of directors is Marvin Bush and Wirt Walker III, a Bush cousin. So they need to be asked some questions. We don't know that they personally were responsible. But it's very, very, very interesting, and some serious investigation needs to happen. So we're not talking about Al-Qaeda anymore. Building 7, for instance, had the IRS, the Department of Defense, the CIA, Securities and Exchange Commission in it. This is one of the most highly secure buildings outside the Pentagon. So we're not talking about Al-Qaeda getting access to this building, right? It's some sort of an inside job. We don't
know. Let's talk a little bit about Building 7 because, as I understand it, that came down, but there was not a plane that hit it. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, no plane hit Building 7, and it dropped like a rock, well, like a controlled demolition. If you ever watched those old photos in Las Vegas hotels, for instance, just beautiful, smooth deceleration. It can only be done by taking out the perimeter columns all at once.
Well, I'm not sure about this, but I seem to recall that Building 7 was not mentioned in the different reports. Am I right or wrong?
Well, good point. The 9/11 Commission was tasked with an overall explanation of 9/11 and the events of 9/11. They did not even mention the third worst structural failure in modern history in any of their 571 pages. And so this is an extremely grievous omission. The FEMA report, of course, had to deal with it, and they did, and that's where they concluded that their best hypothesis of its collapse, which is based on fires that were in it and some random damage from debris from World Trade Center 1, has only a low probability of occurrence. That's pretty damning when your own conclusion of a $600,000 report says that you have no idea how the hell that building came down. That is that's damning. They say further research and investigation and analysis are needed in order to resolve this issue. Well, too bad, because by the time the report came out, all of the steel had been taken and removed from the site at 800 truckloads a day and sent to China for recycling. This is a complete destruction of evidence. No one could resolve the issue, at least not by looking at the steel, which would have been very key. But fortunately, we do have plenty of evidence, as I've mentioned, to suggest that indeed cutter charges were used to bring the building down.
Richard, we have about 5 minutes, so let's review something. I would like to end this on seeing what kind of support that we can do for you and your project. So your goal is to have 1,000 engineers and architects signed up by, what was the date again?
9/11.
Okay, so you're trying to bring this in on an anniversary date.
That's right.
And right now you have 200 and what?
280.
Okay, so you have 280, so there's work to be done. And what we would like to suggest is, I was going to suggest that anybody who has relatives or friends who are architects or engineers to refer them to this website. But let me ask you something about that, Richard. These different organizations, don't they have a roster of people who belong to the different professional organizations?
They sure do, and we will do mailings in every city we go to and speak. We'll invite them to the presentations. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a big number to be done here, and you're certainly putting a lot of your time and effort to it. What else might you ask of? What other kind of support can listeners, what kind of effort and aid can they give to you and your project?
Well, I'm asking every one of your listeners to go onto the website, first of all, and see for yourself the evidence, because everyone who looks at it tends to agree with us. It's very self-evident, and it's very well composed.
Yes, it is.
And backed up on the website. And once you feel comfortable with it, we're asking you to email the link to the website to all of your friends and relatives and find every architect and engineer you can find in your area and even all around the country. Email them the link saying, hey, check this out. This looks very, very, very interesting, and God forbid that it's true. Because if this is true, our country is in deep trouble. Why did such a damning event happen? I mean, what are the possible motives for such a thing? Well, if you think about what happened as a result of 9/11, we have the invasion of two countries, and already a million people have died. But the neocons who are in power, if you will, right now, had a website in 1999, started it, and it stated their goals, which was the increase of the military budget by, $50 billion, and the goal of regional hegemony in the Middle East. And they said, absent a catalyzing and catastrophic event like a new Pearl Harbor, these goals would take a long time to happen. And so what we have in 9/11 is a new Pearl Harbor. And there are many details about that new Pearl Harbor documented in David Ray Griffin's book called The New Pearl Harbor. And George Bush wrote in his diary, we had the new Pearl Harbor yesterday, or today, I think he was definitely referring to 9/11. And so we also have started, the Taliban had completely shut down the heroin production in Afghanistan, and it choked it off to 187 metric tons. And after we kicked them out of power, it went up to 3,500 metric tons. Today it's 6,700 metric tons.
You know, Richard, you are so fascinating, but we are really up to the time, and we've got to say goodbye. Perhaps later you might be willing to come back again.
Oh, you bet. Anytime, Carol.
And so I thank you for being with us, and I thank our listeners for listening. And thank you very much, Richard. Goodbye, dear.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
And for my listeners, this is a reminder. Tomorrow is a very important conference call with Archangel Michael, working with the Standing Wave. And it's most important, my website's www.carolynevers.com. Check that out under the February schedule. Goodbye, friends. Thank you.